Good. This is Sidney Nolan, and I just want to say a few words about how one begins to paint. I think in my own case, perhaps it was due to doing maps at school. I liked the idea of putting a line around the image, you know, and this brought up thoughts of the countries, and in some way one got in touch with the actual thing through putting a line around it. But gradually, when I was about 12, that kind of thing, 14, I went to a technical school, Paran Technical School, and there I did all kinds of things, but essentially drawing there in the art school. At 14, I left school to get a job, and the first one I got was in a factory in South Melbourne called Solarflex, and we made illuminated signs. And then I got a job in an art studio called Leash and White, and there were a number of commercial artists there, and it was there I think I got my first image of Central Australia, because the two artists called Batterby and John Gardner, Rex Batterby and John Gardner, had made the first trip to Central Australia, and they just brought back their paintings. And in the conversation, I can remember overhearing that they talked about a man that they'd got in touch with, who'd been very thirsty, and they gave him water, and that he'd watched them paint, and he'd asked for some paints. And they were, in fact, their next trip up, the following year, going to take some paints up to him. Well, that was Namajira, the Aboriginal artist. So this was kind of interesting thing to crop up was when one was 14 or 15. And years later, of course, I went up there myself and the same kind of country and painted there, and I sometimes wonder if this puts the first glimmer of the idea into you. I then went to another job. I had many, but I then went to Fairfield Hats, into the art department there, where I spent about 5-6 years. And it was then that I started to go to the National Gallery at night, to the art school there. And this was my first real contact, not so much with art, but with artists. And at 21, I kind of jumped off the cliff then, with no money really, but a great idea of being a painter. And I did paint furiously. The last 3 or 4 years, I'd been caught up with prints coming from abroad of modern art and from Paris. And in 1939, there'd been a great show of modern painting in the Melbourne Town Hall. And this caused a terrific upheaval in Melbourne and amongst the younger painters, because we were seeing then for the first time original Picassos, Matisses, and Braques, and Cezannes. And this was the most important thing in everybody's life, and in mine. It transformed my way of thinking, and I became experimental to the highest degree. At the end of the year, then I then produced an exhibition, the first one I had in Melbourne. And it was held in a studio in a 3 rooms, where the rooms walls painted kind of most loudest pink I could find in order to, you know, assert one's youth. And this caused great hullabaloo, and somebody came in, threw green paint over a number of them. They didn't like them at all, obviously. After that, also at the time, I exhibited with the Contemporary Art Society, which was just then arising. And at that time, I was very friendly with people, artists like Arthur Boyd, Albert Tucker, John Percival, and all the people that I'm still friendly with. And we did have quite an exciting period together as young people, talking and painting. And then there were 2 or 3 years, or 4 years of this, I suppose, very exciting, mad time. And then we all more or less went into the army. And I went up fairly soon to a place in the Wimmera district, which is a very beautiful wheat-growing country, Victoria. And I was looking after emergency rations, food rations. And this was my first sustained contact with the bush, with the Australian bush. I saw a lot of the bush and of the countryside at first hand, and I somehow managed to paint a great deal. And it did focus all my attention on the bush and on the landscape and the light. And this altered all my experimental ways of painting. The things I'd been excited about before that came from Europe, I found didn't fit the experience I was having in the country, and I gradually started to paint Australian landscape straight, you know, as clearly as I could get it. At the end of that period then, I'd more or less transformed myself into a painter working on overseas images into one working on Australian images. And I then went into, after the war, into a publishing business called Reed and Harris, which had four partners. One, Max Harris, the poet from Adelaide, the other, John Reed, a solicitor in Melbourne, and his wife, Sunday Reed, and myself. We were four partners. And we had a very stirring 2 or 3 years because there's a kind of scandal occurred over a poet called Ern Melly. This was a hoax. We were sent some poems and asked if we'd publish them under kind of supposedly from a dead poet, and his sister had sent these poems along, and we published them as a great hullabaloo because it was a hoax, and two poets, Macaulay and Stewart, had concocted this thing to prove that modern poetry was no good. Well, it still goes on, and Ern Melly is still published, and I read not so long ago a review in a rather serious Swiss magazine, a solemn, quite good review of the poet Ern Melly, without much reference to the fact whether he existed or not. And he still sells, and I suppose in 300 or 400 years nobody will worry how he was born, you know, they'll just read him as a poet. At the end of this period, things had been so controversial in Melbourne, and I'd had so many years of it, that I thought I would go way into the bush in Queensland for 12 months and wander around. And I found Queensland was a more colonial, more old-fashioned state than the others. I forgot to say just then that after I came out of there, I mean, 45, 46, I did settle down to produce a series of paintings on Ned Kelly. I'd thought about it a lot when I was in the army, and as soon as I got out and had the time to really concentrate on painting, I remembered all these stories I'd heard from my grandfather and everything about Ned Kelly, and I wanted really to try and get some image, some Australian image that I could pour all my emotions and thoughts into, and this was Kelly. After that period, then, when I finished them, and I decided to go to Queensland and to wander around. I had a rather wonderful time in Queensland, went on a couple of quite wacky exploring expeditions in a small way, and I then came back to Sydney. I had been married in Melbourne when I was 21 or so to Elizabeth Patterson, and we had one daughter, and but the marriage hadn't lasted, and Queensland, I'd been wandering around on my own, and when I came back then to Sydney, I stayed a while there, and I married then a writer called Cynthia Reed, and she had a daughter whom I adopted and been together ever since. I had an exhibition then in Sydney of all the work that I'd done as a result of the things I'd seen in Queensland, all this colonial kind of material, and when some of the paintings were sold, as soon as I got the money available, I took my wife Cynthia and Jinx, her daughter, up to Central Australia then. This image had been in the back of my mind for always, I think. And we did a rather long and very interesting trip all around Australia, all through the centre, and really got a tremendous insight into the outback of Australia. And when we came back again in 1948, I produced an exhibition on the theme, on all the centre, as a result of which we had enough money then to go abroad. And we did, 1949, I think it was, we went to London. And then the story changes then rather radically. We went to London, and not so much to London in a way, but that was a base, is to go to France and Italy and Spain. And there, like all Australians arriving for the first time, one's bowled over by all these marvellous works of art in Italy and so on. And also bowled over by the fact that when you see the frescoes and things in an Italian city or town, there's also this relationship between the people outside walking along outside the church and the people inside painted on the fresco, and they all look the same. And you realize then, I think for the first time, that this interaction of painting and of art and people themselves. The thing hadn't quite struck one in Australia, it hadn't been pointed out. And this began the exciting notion then that ultimately one would get in Australia this same kind of evolved and fruitful relationship, that our art would look like us and we would look like the art, and and there, and presumably it would have some kind of beauty such as one was looking at in Italy. We went for a year and we came back after 12 months rather reluctantly, but I was offered a job by the Brisbane Courier Mail to go up and do some drawings of a tremendous drought which was then occurring in Australia up in the centre. And this left a quite permanent impression on me, this sight of all these animals and the aridity. And then I felt that I'd made another contact with Australia. It was very deep, but I still wanted to go back abroad and get and see more of this relationship between paintings and people. And so he went away, and then we began kind of wandering thing for 4 or 5 years, living in Greece for a year and Italy for a year and France for a year, and gradually absorbing this European experience. All of the time I was sending back little exhibitions of almost diary notes of my responses to the things, you know, I saw in Europe. I had an exhibition in London. I did a lot of painting, which in a way wasn't Australian. It was called Leader and the Swan exhibition, and the paintings were quite un-Australian, and I think worried a number of people. But in fact, it was a response then to the European experience I'd had for 10 years, or the English poetical one, and I painted that. And that just about brings us up till now. Well, it's difficult to describe how one paints, but I think I really cook the images in myself until I've got them as clear as I can possibly get them. And I then very quickly, I mean, I'm very slow to begin with in thinking it out, but once I get in front of the canvas, very quick to get something down. I hope that something takes over for a brief period in the painting to melt all images together, because it's very difficult to do this, I think, intellectually, and you're dependent on some rather irrational process at some point in the painting to weld the things together. It's a bit difficult to put it into words, but I think what painters try to get at, or what I try to get at anyway, is that a painting is an extension of yourself. It's a kind of growth thing. If you grew another arm, you know, you hope it would look like a painting. Or anyway, put it this way, a painting sometimes feels like an extension of yourself. And I believe in the past that the Chinese artists working some of their bamboo paintings would put their fingers right into the brush, into the bristles of the brush, and work very, in order to feel this kind of electric thing flowing through them, that they want to get as close as possible to the ink. The other obsession or compulsion in a way is that the growth shall be something that other people can recognize, that it's got a meaning for them. And I think this is the kind of rather knife-edge thing that painters are on, that they want to produce something out of themselves, but they want it to be something other people will recognize. You don't produce things out of your own compulsions to find that they fall on stony ground. It's now beginning that you're getting a response, and this, of course, enables you to produce more and more, make it richer and richer. And it seems to me that young painters now here in Australia are just at the moment when they can have full confidence that whatever they produce honestly will meet with a recognition. And from this moment on, you get back to what you got in Italy and Spain, all these things. You get the community and the art matching each other.